What is Peace Brain? Peace Brain is the synergistic connection between our mental and emotional bodies, blending the electrical power of the mind with the magnetic force of the heart. Listen and explore how to create unity worldwide as we blend science and metaphysics and open our hearts and minds to the possibilities of peace on Earth and create the life we are each destined for. Featured guests range from angel communicators to zoologists and everything in between. Now here is your host, Dr. Gail Lash.
Hello and welcome to the Peace Brain Show. This is your host, Dr. Gail Lash, and I'm really happy to have you here today. Today we have an exciting show. I have Beth Bond as my guest. And Beth and I just completed the Climate Reality Leadership Training with Al Gore here in Atlanta, Georgia, a few weeks ago. And I invited her to be on the Peace Brain Show to talk about actually how faith communities, particularly the evangelical Christian community, can support the environment. So we're going to have a great discussion about that today and learn about creation care and have this exciting topic of peace to talk about. And of course, at the end of the show, I always do this transformative meditation, the Peace Brain Meditation, so please stay tuned for that. And as always, I open a show with a quote, and this quote I chose is from Abdu'l-Bahá, and he says, "Thou must instruct the people of the world in the love of God, that they may eradicate the foundation of warfare and strife, construct the edifice of reconciliation, dispel the darkness of estrangement, diffuse the light of unity, change the poison of animosity into the honey of sympathetic affection, destroy the religious, national, and social prejudices from the individuals of humanity, live and act with and toward each other as though they were from one race, one country, one religion, and one kind." I like this quote because it highlights that really when we're creating peace on the world, on the earth, that it comes from mainly living and acting together in unity and purpose. And that it's paramount that we're instructed in the love of God. God, the religions and spirituality have throughout the ages of humankind instructed the moral codes, instructed the way we care for each other, instructed the way we're to care for the earth. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, that it really is important to get back into that realization that we're not just physical beings, we are spiritual beings as well. We have this really duty and mandate to work together, to work with our earth and to care from each other as we'll talk about probably, as Beth, my guest, told me, from womb to tomb. And it's really important to talk about life in general, about protecting life in general. So today I want to introduce my guest, Beth Bond. She is, as I said, climate leader as well as I. we completed this climate reality leadership training just a little while ago, and really it informs us about how to care for the earth, and it's really important to add that with our faith communities of how to care for the earth. So Beth wears two hats. She is the Women's Ministry Director at the Evangelical Environmental Network, and she's also the curator of Green and Sustainable Business News at Southeast Green. Beth has served on a variety of boards and committees in Atlanta, in the Atlanta Sustainable Community. In 2009, Southeast Green won the Advocate of the Year Award from the Partnership for Sustainable Georgia. In 2010, Southface awarded her the Media Partner of the Year. In December 2011, the Georgia Solar Energy Association awarded Beth with a Solar Advocate of the Year Award. In 2014, she was a finalist for the Trident E3 Award presented by the Atlanta Metro Chamber of Commerce. She has also served on host committees for This Is Market, River Revival, Earth Hour, Green Laws Environmental Heroes, and Get the Lead Out, to name a few. Beth spent her formative years in Mobile, Alabama. She graduated from Florida State University and then served in Bauza, Niger as a Peace Corps volunteer. She is active in her neighborhood and serves on the Community Council for District 3, DeKalb County. When not working to better her community, she participates in her church, where she serves as co-chair for the Creation Care Community. She is an avid tennis player and college football fan. Ooh, we'll have to ask you about that. And her website, if you want to find out more about Beth, is creationcare.org. That's creationcare.org. Welcome, Beth, to the Peace Brain Show.
Thank you so much, Gail. I am so honored to be with you, and I am really looking forward to our conversation today.
I am too. You know, I'll share with the with all of you listeners out there, I was raised Presbyterian, raised in the Christian faith, and of course I haven't left that, but I've also become a Baha'i as well. But the Christian church has so much in its writings, in the Bible, of course, about caring for the earth. And so I want to talk about that first, about how, first of all, we are talking about the Evangelical Environment Network. And so explain a little bit about evangelical, because I know for myself, I probably don't have a correct definition of what it is or view of what that is.
Well, I think you're like most of us, and even I was to some degree, that we define evangelical based on what the nightly news finds evangelical, which is,
and that's probably pretty narrow.
Right, very narrow. A lot of times they're portrayed as single issue driven, and unfortunately, and I don't think this is true, but the way they're portrayed is they don't feel very Christian, right? Because it's one issue and it's my way or the highway, and it's such a disservice to the evangelical community. So the first thing that's really important to know is evangelical is like a really, really big subgroup of Protestants. There are many denominations underneath evangelical, and then there are what I call the modern evangelical movement, which is non-denominational evangelicals. And then there's just evangelicals, and people aren't sure what what they are. So I think you're absolutely right. Most of us have the singular definition, but the reality of it is there's a beautiful group of well-intentioned, faith-seeking, heart-aligning, honoring of God's word from the Bible. And there's just not one definition. I also want to bring up really quickly that given the current environment in the United States, with what's happening in national politics, evangelicals have caught a lot of flack because they are once again perceived a certain way in the media. And most of the time, the media is looking for the best, most dramatic story. And so there's been a lot of focus, right, on these evangelicals who don't sound like Jesus at all, right? Like, we don't want immigrants, and you're not my neighbor, and, you know, white is right, and all the horrible things that we've been hearing. And the reality of it is Pew Trust, a very well-respected nonprofit think tank out of D.C., they dissected evangelicals. And what they found is this sort of hardcore mainstream, it seems mainstream to us, unfortunately, right now, is group of people who are saying they're evangelicals are people who don't even attend church. And that is 20% of the evangelicals who voted for the current president. And so I just want to caution people very carefully that the evangelical church was horrified. And this is not an organized thing, but what's been happening in evangelical circles is once that poll came out and they discovered that people who are claiming to be Christians, and there's no judgment about whether you're a Christian who attends church or not, that's not what this is about, but that they truly weren't in church sort of following the tenets of the evangelical church. And so the term Christian nationalist has come about for that group of people. So a lot of times what you're hearing in the news is about Christian nationalists, this sort of new defined subcategory, and not, you know, regular church-going evangelicals.
Got it. Thank you so much for going over that. Could you, just again for my edification, go over what some of the tenets of the evangelical church are?
Well, there's not cohesiveness, once again, but there is a National Association of Evangelicals, and that is the group that CEN works with most closely. And those folks, they represent about 50 denominations. It includes more conservative lines of, right? I mean, who knew, like, it sort of blows my mind,
that's
right?
So
there's like, there's Wesleyans, which is part of the Methodist tradition. They are not United Methodists, but they're called Wesleyans, and they're all of these groups are going to be right of center, just so you know. They're right of center when it comes to, you know, the scale of center, right, left, and all that good stuff. There are, and Nazarenes, which is another, shoot off of Methodism. There's, several, Lutheran branches, the Missouri Synod, the Wisconsin Synod, the Brethren, and many of these denominations are, sort of, I want to say throwbacks, but a nod to our history of Americans that got developed regionally when, you know, before everybody was plugged in 24 hours a day. So, some of these denominations are very, very small and may only be like in Northeast Ohio, for instance. So, but there are 50 of them, and they have a national board, and they have, national, guidelines / doctrine, and, all the denominations under this National Association of Evangelicals, you know, agree to the language. And the, at least formally, informally, of course, different, but formally. And just to give you a little history, the National Evangelical Association was formed back in the 1950s. The president of the Evangelical Environmental Network, Reverend Mitch Cox, he serves on the board, and so he has really been instrumental in crafting and lifting and guiding the association on how evangelicals should be considering and talking about creation care. For those folks who are outside of outside of faith-based organizations, particularly Christian organizations, creation care is how people of faith define taking care of God's creation. In business, we would call it sustainability. You know, in the nonprofit world, it may be called environmentalism. But in particular, in Christian churches, creation care is you know, recognizing the call of God throughout the Bible to care for the creation that He created for us. Right? This isn't. I think sometimes there's sort of this idea that this is an inanimate object and, you know, God gave us dominion, but, you know, we stand that dominion does not mean destruction. It does not equate. Dominion does not mean lack of intent or lack of concern for the creation that God gave us, quote-unquote, dominion over. And in many translations and in many other places in the Bible, the word dominion is not used. The word stewardship is used, which most Christians really and people of faith understand, right? Stewardship means to care for. You've been given a leadership position to have this responsibility to care for God's creation. And so, unfortunately, there are examples of people who have misused dominion, but most people in the faith space working in most people in the faith base who are working in this, and particularly those of us who are deep, deep down into the creation care conversation, understand that it's about stewardship. And, you
right.
know, God is very clear in Genesis, right? We just, let's just start at the beginning about how he created it, right? And who he created it for. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, and the sin of the world, has shown up in, you know, multiple ways. And that sin is tearing apart his creation. And so, that's why we call it creation care. And there, you know, there is a growing number, thankfully, of people who have this really special, specific lens of taking faith and thinking about how we're treating the planet and using their faith as the basis to care for God's creation.
So what you're really saying, and again, I was raised with stewardship being the word and that we were to care for the earth. So you're saying those who are really using the faith as an excuse to destroy the earth are not in alignment with what is written and what is given to us from God, correct?
Agreed. Yes. That is our position. And let me just really quickly say also that, you know, the one thing evangelicals all agree on is the sanctity of life in the womb.
Yes.
And that's great. And, you know, we're all down with it. You know, it's so precious and tender what happens in the womb. And really a miracle, and you and I discussed the sort of the miracle of what the human body is. When we spoke before the show. But that's sort of a false narrative, because God didn't say only protect what's happening in the womb. And in fact, Jesus is very clear. You know, Jesus says love your neighbor, not love your neighbor in the womb. You know, not love the neighbor who thinks like you, not love the neighbor who looks like you, but love your neighbor. And, of course, there's that famous parable on who's my neighbor, and basically, you know, we got the biggest challenge of our lives, which is everyone's your neighbor. And
mm-hmm.
so the beauty of what Mitch has done is he's the one who crafted the language of from womb to tomb. Like, life is not just valued in the womb. It is totally valued. But we need to be thinking broader than what happens in the womb. It's from womb to tomb. And when you take that lens, not only is it honoring of us as people, but it also broadens the narrative to think about, you know, what's happening in regards to health, and what's happening in regards to mental health, and what's happening in regards to us loving the creation God's given us for our entire life, and not this narrow focus of just 10 months.
Exactly. And you've got on here on the Evangelical Environmental Network, the creationcare.org, some wonderful actions that are being taken. The Clean Energy Campaign, you know, Caring for the Creation Pledge. You've got a youth group, Young Evangelicals for Climate Change. So tell us a little bit about some of those programs. What's happening in that regard?
Yeah, so this is very, and once again, you know, like we're sort of the best kept secret in the evangelical world. we've been around for 25 years. Like, what? Wait a minute. 25 years? Why haven't we ever heard about you? And there's, I think, three sort of main focuses of the work we do. One, and this is the most, is that we are a politically, influencing organization. You know, we are on Capitol Hill regularly. We are engaging with Republicans in particular, because that seems to be where, you know, evangelicals, you know, support in regards to voting and helping educate congressional offices on these issues that are really critical to us. In fact, to just give you an example of how much evangelicals are thinking about creation care, even if they're not maybe talking about it at church or in the pulpit, we submitted 67,000 comments at the end of the last administration to support the mercury rules, which unfortunately the current administration is trying to repeal. But 67,000 evangelicals said, we want to make sure that their our rules and regulations in regarding to mercury, and that this, we acknowledge that this is critical to the health of children inside and outside the womb.
Amazing.
So, I'm really excited, right? Who knew?
So, it is exciting.
You know, I think that that shows you that evangelicals are critically thinking about these issues. The other two things that we do education, and we do that through two sort of branches. We do that through the Young Evangelicals for Climate Action, and then EEN Moms, which is the work that I do with the women. And so we do education, political advocacy, and then we do a lot of work in regards to sort of building, not only educating, but building people to talk about this back in their churches. So one way we do it through Moms is we have a Bible study for women, because one of the challenges is, and this is everybody, but in particular with evangelicals, the conversation about creation care has been politicized, unfortunately. And so, you know, a lot of people, they don't know where to turn where there's a trusted resource, where they can learn about these issues. And so that's, one of the things I love in particular about our Bible study is we've created this Bible study. It's for moms and women to learn together in a safe environment at their places of worship or even, you know, as a small group, about how these issues are important, how they are affecting their children or the loved ones around them, and things that they can do to start realigning the way they live their life and do advocacy to protect the things that we all hold so dear.
Wow, that's fantastic. So if one were a member of a local church and they wanted to find out more about it, go to your website and... And are there programs, in other words, how does one get to have their program maybe be implemented in their church?
Yeah, right now the primary way is to go to the website, and I get emails on a regular basis. I just help the Girl Scout get her, who's working on her Gold Star, which is the equivalent of Eagle Scout, and she is doing a project in her church to reduce weight. So it's so exciting. I love it that she's thinking that way. So anyway, there are, you know, the best way to reach us is through the website. And then, you know, we do events, and, you know, we also have a Facebook page. And so we have a Facebook page for EEN Moms where we're focusing on mom conversation. But we also have the Evangelical Environmental Network Facebook page. And, you know, if we're speaking publicly in places, we list the events there.
Got it. Do you ever do an online classes?
We've talked about that, and since you've put that out, I guess we need to re-talk about it. there are some seminars that we've done for, you know, supporters of EEN folks. Many people in the evangelical space with creation care know about Catherine Hayhoe. We just did a webinar with her in December. But, you know, and I've been asked to do an online Bible study. I just haven't had sort of a critical mass, right?
That's my thinking is that could be put, obviously it's really wonderful to have it in person where the participants can be right there and talk to each other in real time. But it is really wonderful. I know the Columbia Theological Seminary here in Atlanta, in Decatur, has put together some beautiful online classes where people all over the United States or actually world can join and talk about and actually have discussions and, you know, with weekly projects, weekly readings. So it's not too hard to put together. If you've already got the curriculum for the Bible study, then perhaps that could be translated into the online class. For those who are not in the area or want to start something fledgling in their own community but need the background first.
Well, I'll definitely look at that. I don't, you know, and we'll see what we think the best platform, you know, whether it's sort of like a third-party online thing or maybe we just do it
exactly.
On
that's what it probably would be, yeah, something like that. There's so much now, and we're talking about global issues here, not just local issues, although obviously acting locally is so important. So let's talk for a moment about the care of the earth. I want to get into a little bit of what we learned in the climate training, but also what really the Evangelical Environmental Network emphasizes with, like you said, you have the young evangelicals working on climate action. What kinds of things are they doing, for example?
So there's the YECA is focused for 30 and under, but primarily the work is done on evangelical campuses. Kyle Maynard is our director for YECA, and he goes to college campuses all over the country to talk about caring for creation. I know it will not be a surprise for anybody who's listening that young people seem to have more motivation and interest, even evangelicals, in this topic and are concerned because they know what they're inheriting. And so, they, you know, they do education, they participate, in sort of national movement kinds of things like the March on Washington, was that two years ago? I can't believe that. So, two years ago, it was hot. Let me just tell you, my mother was with me, bless her heart. And we were marching with United Methodists, just to clarify. But they participate in things like that. They also have a really amazing fellowship, program. So if, you know, someone's heart is really called to do this work on their campus, they annually have, a group of fellows, normally about, 10 to 15 of them. And, they, you know, pick projects, they get training, for community activism and do projects on their campuses. So YECA is really an exciting program that gives, you know, students of faith a way to express their faith and their concern for God's creation all in the same space.
That's fantastic. And so I want to bring up that, and most people know, but because we're seeing it in our media, we're seeing it in our actual localities, of where we're living, the fires, the floods, the increased storms, the extreme hot days, the extreme cold days, the jet stream changing its course, the different oceans, currents changing, and certainly the oceans warming up, all of this due to primarily fossil fuel burning. And these are the examples that we were given in our climate leadership training with actual people that were impacted telling their stories and just these, you know, I would say horror stories of what's going on in the world. And that really is what one of the main focuses is for clean energy, for caring for the earth in multiple ways. Obviously, individuals can do things of monitoring our waste and not using straws and recycling and all of those things, changing out your light bulbs. There are many, many ways that we can individually do our part. But the greater part, though, is looking at how the world can change into renewable energy. That then helps, as you pointed out, alleviate some of the health problems that, oh my goodness, the people breathing, you know, having asthma rates of children go up and people not having access to clean drinking water and things like this. So these are some of the broad topics that we're talking about when we're talking about caring for the earth. Anything else come to your mind that specifically maybe the evangelical community is highlighting?
Well, I think, so let me just go back and I want to rock on God for a minute. So,
okay.
If you're a person who believes that God created the earth and have paid any kind of attention to what's happening on the earth, God did an amazing job. I mean, it is wicked, wicked, awesome, and cool. And for people like me who just, you know, have a natural curiosity and you know, sort of recognizing that one of the my favorite ways to prove that God was really, really smart is that he was efficient. to me, like, you need to be efficient. You don't need to just work hard. You need to work hard efficiently. You will get much more done that way, right? So once you start sort of looking at these systems in place on Earth, there's a lot of duplication, right? So that means God was efficient. Like, a lot of people may know about the Pacific Garbage Patch, which doesn't seem to have a lot to do with climate, quote unquote, but it certainly has a lot to do with caring for God's creation. You know, the gyra, it's one big sort of rotating clock, essentially, for, you know, and it travels along around Japan and across Alaska and down the coast, Oregon and California, and then bottoms out in Hawaii, and that's where all the trash ends up, and it circles back around the Philippines. And it's just, well, there's five of those. People hear about the Pacific Garbage Patch because it's sort of the largest, but there's actually five gyras, and there's one in the Atlantic and North Atlantic and South Atlantic and Indian Ocean, and all of those gyras that operate the same, function the same way, cool, God, efficiency, but they all have a plastic problem. And so, you know, a lot of it is just sort of recognizing. I always tell people when I speak to them, I'm like, look, this is not about guilt, right? This is not about finger pointing and saying you did wrong or you're a sinner or whatever language you want to use. But as we moved into the economy of convenience, right? That's what this really all boils down to.
Exactly.
It's just convenient. A plastic straw, boy, that's convenient. I get to drink my Coca-Cola. Can you tell I'm from Atlanta? You know, faster. Woohoo! Right? But use it for 20 minutes, and then you throw it away. We use 500 million straws a day in the United States. That's not worldwide, just in the United States alone. There's only 315 million of us, and we're using 1.5 single-use disposable plastic straws every single day. That has to go someplace, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about the use of resources, like, what? Say what? You know, that makes no sense. I'm from Alabama, so I can't do math, but multiply 500 million times 365 days, right? You know, I'm like, you know, we're talking billions of straws annually just put out, you know, in trash, and we know we're all ending up, like, you know, it's all ending up in the ocean. And so, you know, it's not about the sin, it's just, you know, we sort of got trapped into this economy.
Consumerism, and yes. Mm-hmm.
Right, and so, you know, my goal is to say, hey, is this honoring God's creation? Is this the smartest use of the resources God has given us? You know, we always want to be really conscientious about the resources we use. You know, and if you agree that this isn't the best use of those resources, and if you agree that although God is all about abundance, there are still limits to what we have on this earth, then we need to be thinking about how we're you know, living life differently. And the reality of it is that although it seems incredibly convenient, I'm not asking you to sacrifice. Like, I just did a video on the EEN Mom's Facebook page about Easter grass. I love Easter. My family is big on holidays, let me tell you. Big on holidays. But my argument is, right? Think about Easter grass.
Yeah.
All I see when I think about Easter grass is plastic Easter grass blowing wantonly across your front yard at church that's going to end up in the sewer, right?
Wow.
I mean, right? Think about that. No, and nobody
really
does think about that. Right.
You bring back memories from childhood of you know, filling up my Easter basket with the grass first so I could put the eggs in it. But I think that grass at that time was actually paper strips. Like,
I remember plastic Easter grass as a child, but the good news is they have brought back paper.
Good.
And so, I'm like, ladies, I'm not telling you don't have Easter grass. And I'm not telling you not to have the Easter basket. This is not about taking away joy from the holiday. It's just thinking a little more wisely about how we're celebrating the holiday, right? And I promise you, there is no child that is going to recognize the difference between paper an Easter grass and plastic Easter grass, you
right.
know, if they're brought up
That's
on
true.
One or the other. Right. And yeah. so and you know, if paper Easter grass gets blown out, it's going to biodegrade. It's not going to end up in the sewer system, out to the oceans eventually, and into some fish's belly. And that's the thing about plastic that people don't realize is that plastic is it just sort of goes away. It just gets smaller and smaller
yeah.
and smaller, right?
Right.
And, you know, say, well, what does that have to do? What does plastic have to do with climate change? Well, first of all, plastic is oil-based. It's a fossil fuel-based product. You think about all the things we use plastic for, it's a fossil fuel-based product, which means the drilling and the production of that oil to be turned into plastic is part of what causes the climate challenge we're facing. Secondly, the ubiquitousness of plastic, right? Like, there's been this whole shift on the straws thing. I know a lot more about straws than anybody should know. But, you know, they said, okay, we're going to put paper straws. That's been one solution. There's many solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started putting the paper straws in plastic bags, you know, in plastic packaging.
Yes, you're correct.
You know, so, you know, so don't think that that's not intentional. It is. The plastic industry is continuously trying to create new ways that we can use more plastic.
Mm.
And, you know, and we just, as conscientious lovers of the creation that we've been given, we're smart enough to know that there's better ways to do this. And I'm sorry for the plastic industry, but,
they need to transform into something else.
Right. And look, there's things that are plastic that I'm not willing to give up, right? I wear contacts. It's plastic. But to me, that is a completely different kind of thing because, first of all, it helps me see, number one. And number two, it doesn't have that nature of, like, use your 20 minutes, throw away, it's done, right? There's links to the use of contacts. On the same side, though, and I'm still very much interested in the fact that, you know, the little plastic containers that your contacts come in, they used to come in glass jars, little glass bottles.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that shows how old I am. I remember when they were little glass bottles. But, you know, if they would have a mail-back program for that plastic, because that plastic is recyclable, it just can't
yes.
be recycled through mainstream situations because it's too small. But I would mail it all back. You know, I would mail all those containers back to So we have to think about the shift in how we're using things and to be more wise about it. So, you know, I'm not about denial. I'm about just choosing to do things differently that is better.
Excellent. Good job. I want to get back to the youth and the moms for a moment, and that is, you know, we're talking about, you mentioned at the beginning going, or a little while ago, going back to God's creation. And I know that whenever I walk outside into nature, I just have a sigh of relief. I feel this peacefulness. I feel this serenity. I feel a connection to the outdoors. And that was one of my places of solace as a kid, was to go over to a neighborhood lake and feed the ducks and sit there and under the trees and the sunlight. And it made me become a biologist, you know, to study the world. So how is, you know, getting kids out into nature is really important, I think, these days. And teaching them creation care is really important. Obviously, we're doing some of that in school with biological lessons and getting out on field trips, but I know not many kids are really, or it doesn't seem like to me that kids are really focusing on biology these days. So what are your suggestions to teach the young people more about the earth? Obviously, as you are pointing out in these faith-based programs, the Evangelical Environmental Network and its programs, how are the youth learning about nature these days and that care?
Well, I'm going to start off with a little back story where in middle school we went to some nature thing. And it was in Mobile, and it was hotter than sin, and, you know, I mean, it was just nasty hot, and we were climbing around with the bugs and everything, and that sort of swore me off, like, ever wanting to be the person out, and, you know, doing biology.
Gotcha.
So, But
right.
But you know, but so I really appreciate the question, and I honor that. One of the things I think we do really poorly in the church is teaching prayer / meditation. Meditation, of course, is prayer as a form of meditation. But sometimes we need to put on a different lens towards prayer and think about more of a meditative state to be more effective in regards to how we're communicating with God. So the first thing is I have done two pieces on creationcare.org. It's under the EEM Mom section. One is I did a whole blog post on how you teach your toddler to pray. And the second one is a really, really long list of all the Bible verses that are appropriate for children to teach them about how God has created, you know, the earth for us and how we should honor it. But let's get back to that first blog. So one of the things I did, this is, oh yeah, because I'm like, you know, I'm just telling you, as the formal corporate, use that word and some people will be mad at me, but sort of the formal organized church, overall, we do a really, really, really bad job of teaching people how to pray. We all get corporal prayer, which is, you know, sit in the pews, bow your heads, we speak together to God, but we don't have to think about it, we just have to listen to the pastor. I mean, we do that really well.
Mm-hmm.
But prayer outside of that setting, teaching it, encouraging it, we do really poorly. That's a broad brushstroke. Not everybody does it really poorly, but together we do it really poorly. And so in this blog, I wanted mamas. I just love the mamas that, you know, we reach and I work with. And we've had some really sort of cool, exciting stories coming out from some of the women in this small group that I really support. But you know, let's talk about what to do with your toddler. And so the first thing we do is I point out that, like, when you go out in nature with a toddler, they will find a stick or a rock, right? If you go walking with them,
yes.
They will
yes.
hold on to that thing, and it is treasured, and they want to bring it into the house, you know, and put it someplace, and they will hold and treasure and study and learn from that piece of God's creation. Right? For weeks. They can be totally focused on it for weeks. Have you ever seen a toddler do that with plastic? No. They may pick it up. But the wonder, right, the honor, the reveredness, I think I just made up a word, that a toddler does with nature, right,
mm-hmm,
is so
mm-hmm.
special. It's in us, right? It's in our soul to resonate with nature. Of course, as we get older as women, you know, we like expensive flowers, but, you know, beyond that. So the
brings nature into the house.
Exactly. The blog post goes through, like, when you're preparing to teach your toddler to pray and to thank God for all the gifts he's given us, you know, start off with a walk. You know, it doesn't have to be in the nature center, although that's great. But, you know, it could just be in the backyard. And have them pick up a piece of God's nature, God's creation, and then come back into the home and sit down and have a conversation with them about why they picked up that particular object. And then teach them look, this isn't a theology test, right? But just teach them to be thankful and to have gratitude and to honor the thing that God's created. Like, put it in their hearts. This is something God created for us, right? And we are to take care of it. And if you start with those simple lessons when they're toddlers, not only are you developing a prayer practice for them, which is very, very important. Actually, science has now proven the practice of people who pray and meditate are much, much more emotionally healthy than people who don't. But it also is teaching, you know, honoring God's creation. And it's teaching gratitude. And it's teaching thoughtfulness and intentionality. So, you know, if we start them young, and we don't have this conversation, honestly, we just don't. But, you know, if we would just do those simple practices with children and sort of, One of my favorite pastors is Andy Stanley. He's here in the metro Atlanta. He talks about anchoring God and Jesus in their in your children's hearts. Doing those kinds of practices really anchors that whole big fat lesson and all those things we talked about into their hearts. And they'll take it with them for the rest of their lives. And you're creating a healthier human being.
That's wonderful, and I totally agree with you. It is. I remember looking at several articles that are about, usually in Thailand or different Asian countries, they've put meditation as the first 5 minutes of each day for the children, starting as little as like 4 years old and all the way up. That it just centers oneself and it puts it in perspective of setting the intention for the day, if you will, and getting into that quiet space. So it is so important to have that practice. And in our very fast moving world and where we want things instantly and have things happen, information and activities happen 100,000 times a day, we don't take time to stop and to pray and to meditate and to find that center where we're connected to God and the creation. So I totally appreciate that. That sounds excellent. I'm looking at your blog page now. So yes, it is on creationcare.org. Go to the EEN Moms and the blog for that, and you'll find what Beth's talking about. So Beth, we're getting towards the end of the show, actually. What would you like to leave our listeners with in the last few minutes here?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for this opportunity. There's so many really amazing things that happened coming out of that climate reality training, and you are one of those gifts to me, and I really appreciate it. I think
you're welcome. Thank you.
you're welcome. I think that there's three key takeaways we need to think about. If we're a person of faith, and we believe God created the universe, right, not just Earth, but the universe, how do we walk our every day being thoughtful and grateful for the creation that's been given to us? If we use that question when we're picking up that also convenient, you know, coffee from our favorite coffee shop, and they will allow us to use a reusable coffee mug. They probably bought and sold it to you for $20 anyway. You know, if we use that thought, is this action something that honors God? I think our, you know, and you don't have to do it because it'll become muscle memory, right? It'll just start naturally happening. But if you start off with that, then I think that your ability to walk lighter and more gentle on creation becomes a much easier conversation. So be mindful of it until you don't have to think about it. You don't have to be mindful of it because it's just part of your muscle memory. That's the first thing. The second thing is we as Americans in particular are avoiders, right? We avoid confrontation unless it's on Twitter, where we can sort of misbehave anonymously, essentially. But we avoid confrontation. And so I'm never about telling people to go out and fight and make sure people use the right words on this and that kind of thing. But I do believe in the power of example. And once you become that example, you will just be so shocked about what happens around you in regards to how all of a sudden people around you see you doing things and think, oh, that makes sense. Oh, I never thought about it that way. Oh, that's a great idea. And so by being an example of practicing love for God's creation, you actually are being a leader without, you know, without ever having to say you need to compost or don't let that plastic Easter egg grass, you know, float across the church lawn, whatever. Just be an example. And then finally, we have to be advocates. So I told you to be a leader without being a leader, but now I'm going to tell you to be a leader by being a leader. I use this last because you got to do the other two to really feel comfortable, right? It takes confidence to stand up and be an advocate. And so when you're practicing the other things, then it makes this last thing of being a leader advocate easier. But this does not mean that I need you to, you know, be beating a drum beat on Twitter every day, but we need to be present when it's important to be present. So, for example, I serve on community council, and which is an appointed board. I'm appointed by my county commissioner. And we have people come through all the time, and everybody's always ready to, you know, argue about or, you know, say, I don't want this. They call them NIMBYs, not in my backyard. And fortunately, it creates sort of this tension in the conversation. So instead of being like what I would consider a complainer, be an advocate. Go take the action, even if it's just a simple phone call to your county commissioner or even your congressperson, but be present enough to take action to be an advocate and, you know, stand up for the things that count. It matters that our babies in the womb are being poisoned because of the fish we eat. It matters. But unless we say something, no one will know. And so, you know, those are three things that I think really will make a huge difference, not only when it comes to this conversation of creation care, although it's all interconnected, but when it comes to other things too. And as evangelicals and Christians, everything is a lens is who's my neighbor? Well, everybody. Well, if it affects anybody, then it affects everybody. And we need the advocate. And that is a very clear call in the New Testament, right? We are called to be advocates. So that's what I would leave folks with.
Thank you, Beth Bond. It has been a delight to talk with you and to talk with you about creation care. And the Evangelical Environmental Network, oh my goodness, thank you for being on the Peace Brain Show.
Thank you for having me.
So if you would, listeners would like to learn more about Beth Bond, we're talking about going to the website creationcare.org, and you can find out more about the programs they have there and their work, and share in those beautiful affirmations of caring about life and our world here, our universe, as you put it. I love that. So thank you so much, Beth. I really appreciate it. So everyone take a breath for a moment. We are going to go into the Peace Brain Meditation. And this is an opportunity, I think, to practice what we've been talking about today. It is an opportunity to, first of all, I invite you to close your eyes and be aware of your breath. And take a breath. Be aware of where you're sitting. Be aware of the room you're in, and if you have a window, even though your eyes are closed, I want you to imagine you're looking out that window at God's creation, at the beautiful world around you. And you've undoubtedly been outside that window, so in your imagination, in the beauty of your mind, go to the beautiful spot that is outside, the trees, the flowers, the wind, the porch, the swing, the path, and walk there. Feel in your mind that beautiful connection that you have with this earth, this creation, this divine creation. And particularly if you are a person of faith, I want you to thank God for creating this beautiful creation. And if you're not a person of faith, that's okay too. I want you to just breathe in the beauty of the earth. Breathe in the sounds. Breathe in the birds, the animals. My dogs are howling right now. They're agreeing that it is gorgeous outside, that it is this wonderful place. And so with this in mind, I want to bring you back to your day that you walk every day. Stay in this sacred place in your heart, this memory, this connection to this beautiful earth. And as you go throughout your day, be mindful, start to take those steps that we've talked about, that Beth mentioned, is how are these actions you're taking each day supporting this beautiful world, this beautiful creation, and honoring God and the divinity that is immersed in all that we are and all that we do. Start to be aware of these beautiful actions, your coffee cup, your pen, your computer, the phone calls, the way that you lead your life in alignment and connection to this world, to this earth. And you don't need to be a biologist to be doing this. Just feel your body is part of this creation. And with every breath, with every bite of food, with every breath that you sleep, your dreams, you are connected to this world. And then I invite you to be that example for others. As you begin to make perhaps new choices as you walk in the world as to what you choose to do, you're recycling your choices, the Easter grass that goes in the Easter basket. Make it non-plastic, for example. Just being aware, starting to talk about the awareness, not only just doing it, but once you start to do it, then to mention it to others. Hey, I bought some wonderful new Easter grass that's good for the environment. Here, let me give you some for your children for Easter. Or suggest where you might find some. Start to be that advocate by doing and also speaking. And perhaps then even, do you want to become part of your local council, your local community network, your local advocacy group, or talk to your representatives? Start to work with your children and your youth to teach them as well to be mindful, to be grateful, to be thoughtful in the way they care for the earth. And right now, I just invite you to again take a breath and be in that loving space towards all of creation, not only the nature outside the window or outside your door, but your neighbor as well, the people around you, the people who live in your community, the people who live in your city, who you may not know at all, who may be quite different from you. They may speak a different language. They may look differently. Send them love and gratitude for being here as well. We are one family. We are one child of God together as the human race. So again, take a breath. Bring yourself back to your room and your chair. I invite you to end with whatever prayer is appropriate for you. And I want to recite a very short prayer that goes, O Son of Spirit, my first counsel is this, possess a pure, kindly, and radiant heart, that thine may be a sovereignty, ancient, imperishable, and everlasting. So thank you for tuning in to the Peace Brain Show today and tuning in with my guest, Beth Bond of the Evangelical Environmental Network. You can find out more again about her at creationcare.org. And if you want to learn more about me, Dr. Gail Lash, you can go to my website, tourismforpeace.com, or email me at hello@peacebrain.org. So now please go forth and activate your peace brain and put your peace park on our World Peace Trails map. Many, many blessings. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Peace Brain Show. You can find us at tourismforpeace.com. Be sure to check out Dr. Gail's Akashic Records readings, her peace master plans for your business or organization, and her book, #OptForPeace, 9 essential steps to achieving peace, power, and prosperity. Tune in to BBS Radio, Station 1, every other Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific and 9 p.m. Eastern to the Peace Brain Show for your installment of wonder, inspiration, and practical peace.